episode 22. It's closer than you think. So close. It's here. I'm here, Ryan, alongside Kevin.
Yes.
And motherfucking Dave.
I'm back.
Whoa.
We're happy.
That was really loud.
You told me to speak up.
I did. So that's partially my fault, mostly your fault for yelling. But
I brought the energy.
That's all right. I was going to say, this is your reintroduction to the podcast, Dave, so I will allow you to overmodulate and ruin my equipment. That's just fine. It's closer than you think. That is, of course, our tagline for this week. It is in reference to a movie that Kevin told you to watch last week. So go back to last week's podcast, listen to the very end of it with our what to watch, and he will piss me off by telling you to watch a shit movie and give you the answer for the tagline contest for this week.
Because if you Google It's Closer Than You Think,
right,
it just comes up hepatitis. Like the first like six or seven links are to a hepatitis campaign.
That's awesome.
It's Closer Than
it's
You
actually
think.
On a poster for Paranormal Activity 4 as well.
Oh, well, that's not it. This movie probably will give you hepatitis. So I can't get behind that you should watch it. But you should, in fact, figure out what it is. Send your guess to us in an email, which you can do moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your answer to us at moviesonup, or you can go to our homepage, moviesonup.com, follow our Facebook link, and get to our Facebook page and do some Facebooking there. And if you do all that, we actually do have prizes now. One prize. Now, we've got buttons, and I showed them to Dave, and I showed them to Kevin, and they're pretty rad. So if you'd like to see what our button looks like, you should probably take part in our tagline contest, and maybe I will send one to your residence. Kevin, why don't you tell the good folks at home what we've got on tap for them today?
We have got a lot of shows, starting with a little bit of news, including stories on Spider-Man, Apes, The Mummy, and another monster, Nicolas Cage. Then we kick off the month of October by taking an in-depth look at horror movies from 2002 to 2012. And it's going to be a list-heavy episode as we each give our top 10 horror movies from the last 10 years. Also, we're going to be going over our listener-submitted fantasy film ball picks, and we're going to give you the first 8 suggestions for our 31 films to watch this October.
Well, there was one that probably wouldn't have made our list. It was kind of, it's not a horror movie, but it's Halloween-themed, and that was affectionately named Hotel Tranny that you came up with last week. And I guess we probably should have put that on our list. A lot of people already had it on their list. They went to see it this past weekend.
Yeah, it kind of, September kind of sucked for the box office. But that last weekend kind of picked it all up. Hotel Transylvania opened number one with $42.5 million, which is the biggest September opening ever. So it's halfway to its $85 million budget already. Looper, who both of you thought would open number one ahead of Hotel Transylvania, still had a strong showing, just under $21 million to come in second place. That's on a $30 million budget. The other wide release, not so good luck. Won't back down. People won't be seeing that either. Came in at number 10 with $2.6 million, which is just a $1,035 per screen average. The smallest opening ever for a movie on 2,600 screens.
So we've got the smallest with Oogie Loves. That broke a record for the most pathetic opening.
That was on 1,200. That was on for 1,200 or more screens.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying we've got another record,
yeah,
too. So
yeah. And
awesome.
Yeah.
And great job, studios.
Pitch Perfect. It opened limited this week trying to build buzz for its wide release this coming weekend. Kind of did that. It only opened on 335 screens. Came in sixth at $5 million. So it brought in over $15,000 per screen. It's a third of its way to its $17 million budget already.
So it's a third of a way to Pitch Perfect 2?
Probably, yeah.
I contributed to that record-breaking box office as I saw Hotel Transylvania.
Did you like it?
It was all right. I'm glad that they introduced like the Universal Monsters to children, mm-hmm. New generation. That's neat. I also saw Spider-Man.
And I know you didn't like that, because you went out of your way to tell me.
Did not like that.
It'll be interesting this weekend, because Hotel Transylvania, it's pretty much the only kids movie out right now. I forget what comes out, unless Frankenweenie comes out
Frank
this week.
Frankenweenie,
I think it does
come out this
Yeah, so that'll probably get hit pretty hard. But Looper's got strong word of mouth, but whether it can take over the Taken 2 crowd that's going to come. But I think both of them will hold pretty strong, despite new movies opening up for the same audiences.
Speaking of Spider-Man and Kevin's utter disdain for that film, you can probably combine that with Dave's. I liked it, And I'm glad to see that Mark will be spinning his web again. Director Mark Webb officially confirmed to come back for the sequel to The Amazing Spider-Man. Andrew Garfield also confirmed to return with Emma Stone in talks to do the very same. Alex Kurtzman, Robert Orsi, and Jeff Pinker are rewriting the script by James Vanderbilt. The movie, set to begin production early in 2013 to meet its release date of May 2nd, 2014.
Yeah, it was never a question of whether he wanted to come back. It was whether he would be allowed due to contract. So they got that all worked out, and he's coming back.
Well, that's not wise, man. Len Wiseman, fresh off his remake of Total Recall, has wrapped up the job of remaking The Mummy. Producers Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orsi and John Sepetas have tapped Wiseman to tackle their darker, scarier take on the character set in modern time. They're planning a summer 2014 release.
Good for him, I guess, after that colossal $200 million bomb of Total Recall to get another one that's potentially a franchise.
Yeah, and this one, I think even more so than Total Recall, The Mummy is sort of a franchise. If you look at the Brendan Fraser ones, not quite the same thing they're going after here.
I mean, they got, three or four out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And now this one, they just want to set in modern times, make it more scary, less action.
More like the Universal, but set in modern times, which, I mean, I like the Universal stuff. We're starting to see, I think there's a story later about a remake of an old Universal monster flick, so I'm with that.
I mean, it's an interesting idea. I just don't think it's an interesting choice to actually do it.
One of the reasons I hated Spider-Man because I thought it didn't bring enough newness or enough of a reboot. Kind of feel that way with The Mummy, but I'm glad they are taking it in a different direction because as a franchise, do people care about The Mummy? Are there people who collect mummy stuff and hang mummy posters on their wall?
Probably. Statistically speaking, I would say there has to be. Okay. And maybe one of them is in our listening audience. Jay Baruchel, ready to go on to Goon 2. The co-writer, co-star of Goon, announced on Twitter that he has begun the sequel. Baruchel will be writing the script with Jesse Chabot, who was an associate producer on the first one. Evan Goldberg, who co-wrote the first one, will produce, and Michael Dowse will return to direct.
I'm excited. I mean, I enjoyed the first one.
That was pretty high on your summer list, right?
Yeah, my midway point. I a lot of people that I know have seen it enjoyed it. And it's a kind of story you can carry on. Like, yeah, there was closure of the first one, but its career's just starting, so you can still go somewhere with it.
This was a movie I feel was a love or hate movie. People who liked it loved it. People who didn't hated it. It made about $4 million in the U.S. and $2 million internationally, which obviously mostly was Canada, but obviously these guys enjoyed themselves making this film, and they want to return to that franchise to play with the story a little bit more.
Goldberg not writing, I think, might hurt. I think that'll affect it a little bit, because I think Evan Goldberg's super talented, but I mean, I'll give it a shot for sure.
Ruben Fleischer of Zombieland, Gangster Squad, taking a shot to bring on Spy Hunter, the 1983 classic arcade game, to the big screen. The project has been in development since 2003, with John Woo, Paul W.S. Anderson, and The Rock all attached at some point. Spy Hunter, for those of you that didn't play the 1983 arcade classic, follows a spy that hunts down rogue agents when they can no longer be trusted while driving a car that's got some machine guns on the front and the ability to shit oil out the back.
Yeah, and I think there were spikes at some point.
Probably.
But in 2003, this was outdated. This was a terrible idea 10 years ago
when
it started.
In 2003, it was outdated, and then they released a video game that was supposed to tie in with the movie that got scrapped. And I think The Rock was actually in
the
video
game.
I mean, the plot seems okay. I don't remember the plot of the video game because you're just driving.
It was 1983, and they didn't have them.
I remember playing the arcade, but
The fact that this has played hot potato since 2003 is scary. Originally in 2004, 2005, when the first script came out for it, it was given a $90 million budget. And then the script was so terrible that they kicked those dudes to the curb, got a new script. It was terrible. Back and forth. What makes me believe that it's going to be any better this time?
It's very rare to hear the words good script associated with a video game property.
Movie?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that almost kind of goes without saying.
Plus, I'm low on Fleischer. He hasn't done anything to impress me so far. I know you guys disagree, but...
Well, I mean, I like Zombieland. I haven't seen Gangster Squad yet, so obviously... So we'll have to see. Maybe he'll change your mind. Myths in Black. Men in Black director Barry Sonnenfeld is in talks to direct Lore, which is pretty much Men in Black with mythical creatures instead of aliens. The aforementioned Dwayne The Rock Johnson is attached in the Will Smith type role.
Stick with what you know, I guess.
I think I'm okay with it. As long as these mythical creatures, if they're like crypto creatures, oh, I am so on board. Oh, that's great.
And he did a great job creating a universe with Men in Black. So I say it with snark, but I think he's a solid choice for a director for this.
Sonnenfeld got his start, actually, as a cinematographer for the Coen brothers. But then when he branched out on his own as a director, he did the Addams Family movies, he did Wild Wild West, the Men in Black movies, and now this, which, like Dave said, he created a universe. He's probably the perfect guy for the job.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the idea itself is pretty neat. Instead of getting, you know, Men in Black 4, and actually, I guess... Was 3 the most recent one? I think so.
Yeah, 3 was this summer.
I saw that one. It was okay. It was relatively enjoyable, but I'm glad that, you know, we're going to maybe get something like this rather than a Men in Black 4. Fox, hoping they found their Whedon as they hire acclaimed comic writer Mark Miller of Wanted and Kick-Ass to act as creative consultant over all of their Marvel properties.
He's a comic book writer that's always wanted to do movies. He knows the properties. I mean, right now you're looking at the Wolverines in development. It's coming out.
Fantastic Four.
X-Men. And I think he's going to be more in play over the Josh Trank Fantastic Four reboot.
And he seems like he's relatively, or at least he said he was decent friends with all of those guys, with Trank especially.
Because X-Men, that's already deep into production, and the Wolverine's already filming, so... I think his stamp is really going to be on Fantastic Four.
Right. Which really is where I think they need the most direction.
And
anyway.
I think that's where they want it right now.
He's kind of brought in to make sure there's continuity between the films so that they all are part of a universe. The thing I like about Miller specifically is that he wrote Civil War, which I would like to see on screen in some capacity.
I'll agree with you, but I think that that's going to be difficult just because the different studios are on. You can't. I wish they would, but I don't see that happening. It would be pretty rad, though. Cleveland, Marvel loves you. Captain America's sequel apparently will film some bits back in C-Town. Do I smell a chance encounter with Anna Kendrick on East 9th Street?
She'd have to get cast first, but if she doesn't, Imogen Poots might.
Well, either way, I'm sure.
I think the bigger thing here is Avengers filmed there in Cleveland. I think you're going to see a lot of big pictures coming in to do Cleveland, and same with Pittsburgh. Like, I think years ago you had the New Mexico boom where things were filming there because you can make them look like bigger. So I think Cleveland and Pittsburgh are going to be very, very busy over the next few years with just big movies there.
Right, with the success of that movie with Jacob in it, that was filmed pretty much entirely in Pittsburgh.
And
this
is going to be shot, 40% of it will be in Cleveland, and coincidentally, Dave mentioned New Mexico is going to also have another large chunk of this movie.
Well, there you go. I mean, that just kind of backs up your point, and I'm glad to see, you know, big movies coming to the area, because what the hell? Maybe I will get some vacation time and go be an extra and snuggle up real close to Miss Kendrick. Not close enough to violate whatever restraining order she no doubt has against us. From Twilight to Dawn, Matt Reeves has decided to exit the long in-development Twilight Zone movie and will replace the recently departed Rupert Wyatt on the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Wyatt left amid concerns of not being able to meet the 2014 release date.
I'm bummed. I thought Rise was fantastic. I thought Wyatt brought a lot to it. But I think Reeves is a good replacement. I think he's extremely talented. He has a good eye. I don't think it's that much of a downgrade.
I don't know that it's much of a down. I'm looking at it more from the Twilight Zone aspect. And that movie, just for goodness sake, like, they can't seem to get anything to go right for that.
He was the closest one.
Yeah.
And now he's out.
And so, I think, you know, without kind of the persistent backing of DiCaprio, that movie probably would have gone away long ago. But, you know, we'll see if he's got enough juice to keep things going.
The thing that scares me about Twilight Zone is it's not an anthology movie. It's just a single storyline.
Being the Twilight Zone, what it was an anthology series, and then there was already an established movie that was an anthology movie. Really, maybe you're just capitalizing off the name at this point.
See, I would like a movie we're going to talk about later, a Twilight Zone movie in the vein of Trick or Treat from a few years ago, where it's an anthology movie told as a narrative, where it's not, here's this story, here's this story, here's... It's just interweaving like a crash, almost, kind of, I guess. Like the crash of the Twilight Zone.
Not the Cronenberg crash.
Oh, not the helicopter crash. Disregard that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. We're just going to sidestep right around that. Richard Kelly and Nicolas Cage teaming up for their true life crime thriller. Legal action drama, if you got all that. Amicus. The story starts with a man hiring a hitman to kill his family. The hitman does that with the help of a book called Hitman, a technical manual for independent contractors. This causes some problems. The families of the other hitman's victims band together, file a class action lawsuit against the publisher of the book. Nick Cage will play Rodney Smola, the First Amendment lawyer in the middle of all of this.
This sounds like a stupid enough story to be a Richard Kelly movie. Just where can he fuck it up with special effects and everything?
Right.
That dude is fucking garbage. This doesn't have any like magic or spaceships or anything in
maybe,
it.
Maybe the book is like a character and like with the help of the book.
There'll be dialogue between the book and
the
killer.
Like the book grows legs and actually shoots people. Maybe
I mean, Richard Kelly's garbage. He's absolutely garbage.
Yeah.
This story is interesting. But with Nick Cage, can you take it seriously?
It was interesting until I found out they were trying to make a serious movie. And then I was like, shit.
Yeah.
Richard Kelly also has, I don't know what the status of it is at this point, but Corpus Christi, which was the PTSD Iraq war vet, becomes friends with a billionaire. And it was a Richard Kelly movie, basically. But that movie has popped up and went away a couple times.
Because people saw The Box and Southland Tales.
Right.
And
they
watched Donnie Darko again and realized...
I didn't mind Southland Tales.
I didn't
Featuring the aforementioned Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I didn't hate it like everybody else
no,
did.
No, neither did
but
I.
But it's a garbage movie. It was enjoyable enough, but it's a piece of shit.
It's hard not to have a movie podcast and talk about The Rock, because he's attached to every movie that's
well,
in production.
Well, we've hit him up three times already.
But oddly enough, never had a franchise. I did a big study when G.I. Joe was supposed to come out this summer.
About,
I had a big thing.
Scorpion King... Kinda.
That was a spinoff. He's
That's
never
true.
Been in a sequel to his own movie, but yet he's been in like eight sequels to
other
franchises.
People's movies. Fast Five.
I'll tackle it when G.I. Joe comes out.
Let's give him a call, see if we can talk to him.
Like,
about
I did this big study on the career of Dwayne The Rock Johnson just because it's fascinating to
You're
me.
Gonna get us a restraining order against Anna Kendrick and The Rock. That's gonna suck because
yes.
Kevin likes to go to wrestling events. Hot for Teacher, Britt Marling joins Terrence Malick's Lincoln film now, not to confuse you. That film is called The Green Blade Rises, and doesn't that just scream Abraham Lincoln? Britt Marling not playing the teacher. She's playing Lincoln's mom. Wes Bentley will play Lincoln's first teacher.
This movie just sounds boring all around, but I like Britt Marling a lot. She's super talented as an actress and a writer.
Malick certainly hasn't been my cup of tea lately, but to see him actually make a movie that may have a plot and some character interaction might be fascinating.
I think this one will have a bit more than a color form.
Yeah.
But Malick does bring attention, so if he can open up Britt Marling to an audience wider than what she's hitting now.
And another funny thing is, we haven't even seen Lincoln yet, and I think there's already a Lincoln overload.
Well, there might be.
Lincoln is the new Twilight. That's what I've been saying. I'm Team Wilkes Booth.
Oh, Jesus, you're a terrible human being. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? Gina Carano is the first one cast for the female Expendables, the femme Spendables, chick Spendables.
We cast this.
Did
her
we put
name,
her in there?
No, her name came nowhere because we went
really?
With people. I don't think so.
Because I had just seen Haywire not too long before I did
that.
Yeah,
we put actors in there, though. And it's just
did we?
Yeah.
No.
I think
we
this
didn't.
This is interesting, but it'll be more interesting when the second person's cast.
And she wasn't bad in Haywire.
No, she wasn't.
All right.
But it'll be more interesting when the second person's cast, because is she the Liam Hemsworth, where she's the one that's out of place and you have all these action vets, or is it going to be a cast of people like
There wasn't a Liam Hemsworth in the first one. It was just guys that were in place.
And Expendables 2.
Right, I'm just saying in the first one, the first Expendables, it was just all people that were, and none of those guys could act either. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, like, but they made a career out of it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think
I don't know how they would cast anything but veterans and her, because there aren't modern female action stars, unless they plan to adapt, like, I don't know. They could do...
I think there are. I think
Anne Hathaway, you know?
No, I think like Zoe Saldana, like a...
Yeah,
Even Noomi Rapace right now is starting to establish herself.
I would give her that. I think you could...
Keira Knightley's done it.
The broad from Resident Evil.
Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, her.
Kate
she'd be
Beckinsale.
A good one.
I guess you guys are right. Gina Carano's just...
The other broad from Resident Evil, Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are enough.
Allie Larder.
Sure, the other broad from Resident Evil.
So I mean, they're out there.
Just Paul W.S. Anderson.
Saoirse Ronan.
Get your fingers on this and just scratch out the name from Resident Evil Anaya Splodation and just make it an Expendables movie, and that'll be fine. Martin Freeman and Eddie Marsan join Edgar Wright's The World's End.
I enjoy both of them. It's cool to see Freeman because after The Hobbit, he's going to be able to have his choice of roles. So to see him want to do this, I think it's cool. I think it says a lot about them. Not that I had any doubts about the movie, but Freeman's going to blow up. I mean, he's fucking Bilbo.
Yeah.
This is the finale of the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy with Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And it's basically about guys reuniting 20 years after a bar crawl to do it again in a post-apocalyptic setting.
Because Gandalf said that they needed to.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy headlining Doug Liman's Everest. Hardy will play George Mallory in the adaptation of the Jeffrey Archer book, Paths of Glory.
I like some Hardy.
I know.
I'm hard for Hardy.
I know you do.
Doug Liman, he's just lining up movies that I'm interested in, like one after the other. So
I actually like what I wrote down here. As much as I hate the term bucket list, but one of the things I've always wanted to do is climb Mount Everest, which will probably never happen.
Seriously?
Yes, seriously.
Fuck.
But all right. I do enjoy rock climbing movies, and that gives me a boner, and Tom Hardy's in it, so I have two boners.
All right, give me three of your favorite rock climbing movies right now.
Cliffhanger.
Okay. Vertical Limit.
Yes. I don't know. I knew he'd be able
Vertical
to get two.
Limit.
I didn't.
And the third one's not a movie, but it should have been. It was called Banner in the Sky. It was a book.
K2?
The Widowmaker. And I was
wasn't K2 a... That's a Kilimanjaro movie, I thought.
I don't know. I just been rock climbing. Kilimanjaro is a big rock, isn't it?
Yeah, but
K2 is the peak.
I have two boners for this movie.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Everest. I was just... I knew he'd say
Cliffhanger.
You might
say my boner looks like a mountain.
No, I wouldn't say that. Not that I don't know what your boner looks like. Well, let me get that. Like,
I can step outside for a second.
There. No, that's quite all right. I prefer you stay right where you're at. Natty P, speaking of boner, to play Jackie O.
Speaking of boner.
Very good. Vox Searchlight, interested in Natalie Portman to play the lead in the Jackie Kennedy biopic. Jackie. Darren Aronofsky was once attached to direct, not so much now. Noah Oppenheim's script has been reportedly caught the eye of one Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg directs a Jackie O movie starring Natalie Portman. She's getting an Oscar. Like, they won't even watch any movies that year. They'll give it to her.
Well,
this is sort of like Lincoln to me. It's going to be exactly what you expect. I think Dave nailed it that he said Natalie Portman in a Spielberg movie about Jackie O. Yeah. She's getting an Oscar. I would rather Aronofsky did it just to give it some heroin or.
See, yeah, what kind of weird shit he would do.
Yeah.
I think she'll do a better job in this role than Minka Kelly, who I believe is playing Jackie Kennedy in that movie about the White House butler.
Yeah, I don't think anybody matters in that movie. That just seemed like stunt casting all around. In that
I
movie.
Think so. I just think it's funny that you have essentially playing the same role, different films, of course, but Minka Kelly and Natalie Portman. So, you know, compare and contrast those two. The Farrelly brothers announced that Dumb and Dumber sequel will officially be titled Dumb and Dumber 2.
That's T-O.
Yeah, it's not T-O-O, it's T-O. They hope the film in the spring of 2013 with a story following the two leads 20 years later as they try to find one of their children.
Who cares? I'm into the first one enough. I don't want this. I don't need this.
Right, too much time has passed. The first one's legendary. When I saw it in theaters, I've never seen a reaction like that to a movie. I thought I was going to have to give my mom CPR. Because she was laughing so hard.
Now, if we talk about movies that have taken too long, the first one was really funny. The second one was decent, too. Bill and Ted. It's not been too long for a Bill and Ted sequel.
No,
but,
it's been too long, but I'm still interested.
But, okay, but I'm just saying, I don't want to... We're not going to use the it's been too long for this one, and it's not been too long for Bill and Ted. Because Bill and Ted was before Dumb and Dumber. I'm not as interested in this movie, but I'm just going to say it's because... I like the first Dumb and Dumber. I've not liked anything they've done since then, so I'm okay. That's the reason that I'm going to stick my nose up at this. All You Need Is Kill, a.k.a. thank you for finally doing this just for me. The Bitch of War gets a March 2014 release date.
I'm excited. This is a Doug Liman movie that I'm super excited for, so...
I don't know that I'm excited for it. I hope they change the name because I want to see that on a movie poster.
Yeah.
All You Need Is Kill? I'm super stoked for it.
Nah. Bitch of War. I'm super stoked for that. Super stoked for Seth MacFarlane. He will be this year's Oscar host.
Are you really super stoked?
Yeah.
I like him.
You might be the only one.
They're going to have... Yeah. I mean,
there's going to be musical... Because he actually can sing.
And he can sing.
And he can do voices.
And he's funny.
Has he hosted anything?
He hosted some Comedy Central roasts.
He's safe and edgy at the same time. Like, he's network edgy.
Yeah.
Like, Family Guy
he's
pushes...
Fox edgy.
Yeah, Family Guy pushes the limit just enough, but not too far, so...
This whole time, the push has been, we want to get young viewers.
That's how you do
so
it.
So they've done that with Seth MacFarlane, but I think Jimmy Fallon was going to be the host, and I think that covers both bases. Is Seth MacFarlane skewed too young, where old people are going to shut it off and say, I can't watch this guy?
I don't know that old people are going to shut it off because of Seth MacFarlane. You know, I think they're going to watch it anyway. Just if the old people are used to watching the Academy Awards, they'll watch it again regardless of who's hosting. I just think it'll end up being better than Franco and Hathaway. I like both of them, but that didn't go well.
A train wreck.
Yeah. Exactly.
I just think this will be really, really funny in an awkward moment if Ted ends up losing Best Picture.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other reason that I was thinking that it's sort of appropriate is that, you know, it, more so than Jimmy Fallon, like he was involved in one of the biggest movies this year. So I do think it's good that that he'll be involved in that. I think it's great that Daniel Radcliffe is interested in being involved in Fox's new Frankenstein reboot. Paul McGuigan of Lucky Number 11 will direct a script written by Chronicle director Max Landis. I know that Chronicle director does nothing for Dave, but you know we kind of talked a little bit about the Mummy remake at the top. It's been a while for Frankenstein, and I do think that it's kind of cool that some of these Universal Monster movies are going to get remade, reintroduced.
There's also I, Frankenstein with Aaron Eckhart that's going to beat this by a while because that's already in the process. So, and I mean, they failed. There was the Julie Roberts one was a different take on it.
Yeah,
but
there
it,
was,
it just seems like they try every like 4 or 5 years and it just never works.
And there was the one that was quite a while ago. Was it De Niro? Was Frankenstein?
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for a good one, really. And I think if it goes back to the roots, I mean, some of these, I mean, these
but
Universal
I mean,
ones are approaching 80, 90 years old at this point. They're really old.
And
I think
that's
they could
where
use an update.
You look at the Wolfman. I mean, I could be alone in thinking this. The Wolfman, you made the movie that was made back then today. It didn't modernize it at all. Like, can you take Frankenstein and is it possible to make it now, like what they're doing with the Mummy?
I don't think I don't want it to be set necessarily in current times. I would just like, you know, with the available technology now to be able, you know, to tell.
I think it needs to be updated somewhat. I really do. Even if you put it in the 70s or something, I think it needs to be more accessible.
Yeah.
Go watch Frankenweenie then.
The note I had for this was Daniel Radcliffe. We talked about him a couple weeks ago. He's going to do Horns. So he's looking to do this as well. I'm curious to see where his career goes.
He's certainly got a type.
Yeah.
Between Woman in Black,
yeah,
Horns,
I was just gonna say.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the folks that grew up with Harry Potter are kind of into black magic and the occult. So they'll be interested in seeing his
Frankenstein set
films.
At Hogwarts.
And just to kind of smoothly segue from a classic horror movie to some horror movies that are maybe a little bit more recent. We pitched it a little bit last week, said that we were going to give you a list of our 10 favorite movies of the last decade from 2002 to 2012. Now, the reason we picked 2002, we didn't go all the way back to 2000, is there's kind of a specific horror vintage that sort of started in 2002 with some really good movies.
If you look at the 90s, like you hear people talk about the 70s horror movies, the 80s horror movies. Not many people harp on the 90s because there wasn't horror was kind of in a dark phase for a while. But then 2002, it seemed like everything switched. It turned. You had Cabin Fever come out wide. It kind of introduced the gore fun to a wide release, to like a mainstream. Like it was kind of an indie horror movie with the indie appeal that went wide and kind of got a lot of attention. The Ring was a huge hit. It was one of the most successful horror movies in a long time. That kicked off the phase that lasted 4 or 5 years of just, let's remake every Asian horror movie ever. And 28 Days Later, not an American film, but it was so good over there that they brought it over here, which kind of opened the door. You weren't seeing a lot of overseas horror movies getting recognition
come over here and have commercial success,
yes,
especially.
So 28 Days Later, not only did it do that, it kind of kicked off the zombie craze that's been for the... I know you can cringe and not call it a zombie movie. It's not a traditional zombie movie.
Not only do I not call it a zombie movie, neither does the director.
No, but it's a zombie movie. You could call it what you want. It turned zombies into an outbreak. It gave you a different... It introduced running zombies. I mean, it kicked off the zombie phase. Whether you want to admit it or not, it absolutely did. Resident Evil kicked off a franchise that's still being made. And then Jason X and Halloween Resurrection were two major horror franchises. Those were the final installments of those.
As we know them.
Not including Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah.
The final installment of those before they got remade. So, I mean, 2002 kind of changed a lot of stuff. And the last 10 years in horror has been pretty solid. That's why we wanted to do our top 10 of the last 10. And I'll kick off those lists right now. My number 10 movie of the last 10 years, Drag Me to Hell from Sam Raimi.
That movie, it's on my list. I some of these I'm going to take off just so I can mention more lists, okay, more movies. But I really did like this one. I don't want to take it out. It was Raimi's first genre movie since 92 when he finished Army of Darkness. Interestingly enough, that's when he wrote this movie, yeah, was 1992. It just took
him
a while
to get
around to it.
And you could tell, like, it was a return to what people loved about Sam Raimi. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what I was going to say. The thing I love about Drag Me to Hell was that it gives you the type of imagery that other horror movies aren't. It's unique in that it's Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
And it was goofy. Like, it had the same
the
sense
Raimi
of humor.
Goofiness. Yeah.
It had the sense of humor that, you know, the Evil Dead's had, but he was the director of the Spider-Man trilogy, so it got a wide release and got seen by a lot of people.
And what year was Drag Me to Hell?
Oh, I don't
2009.
Know.
2009. All right. My number 10 was actually a recent one, too. A little bit more recent. 2012's Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods, another one that brought originality back to horror. The horror we've seen in the last couple years has been found footage, zombies, not a lot of slashers, not a lot of different type movies. And Cabin in the Woods did the whole puppeteer thing, and it worked. It was awesome.
And that was just on the edge of my list. It was a little
too
recent, like, but I mean, it was so good. It could have been more successful. It was so good, but you can't sell that movie. That movie's so hard to sell without spoiling it.
Right.
And I think that hurt it a lot, but it's still, anybody that's seen it loves it.
I think it'll pick up. It'll be one of those cult movies.
Maybe it absolutely will.
Didn't do as well.
From talking to people, though, I would say we're in the minority that more people hate this movie than liked it, even of the ones that have seen it.
You might be right, but I think as more people see it later, they'll probably like it. My number 10 movie is from 2002. Similar in tone, I guess, to Drag Me to Hell, and there's probably a particular reason. That is because it stars Bruce Campbell. It is Bubba Hotep. Love this movie. I think of all the roles I've really seen Bruce Campbell in, I think the one that he was really the best in was playing a guy who is trying to convince everyone else he's Elvis. It's set in a nursing home with Bruce Campbell playing Elvis and Ossie Davis trying to convince everyone that the government died John F. Kennedy as a black man and hid him in a nursing home. It is a really, really good movie. And I think, obviously, it's my 10th favorite. There's a soft spot in my heart for
it. Had I thought about this one, I might have put it on my list.
I wanted to like it more than I did. I was excited about it. I went and saw it at an indie theater.
Me too.
And I just wasn't super stoked on it. If you're looking for like quirky Bruce Campbell-led movies, I would take My Name is Bruce over this one just because it's just a goofy Bruce Campbell being Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, it is. He's less goofy in this, though. You know
oh,
what I
no,
mean?
Oh, no, he is. Like, he is. He totally is. But it's just, they're the same kind of movies where they're just silly. The premise just is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's a mummy that sucks the soul out of your asshole. So, spoiler alert. Long-planned sequel, Bubba Nosferatu. We do have a list that's been compiled from, we're going to call him our horror consultant.
Horror correspondent.
Correspondent. And the aptly named Rick of the Dead. Rick sent us in his 10, so we'll just kind of go through his pretty brief. What was Rick's 10th?
Rick pretty much watches a horror movie or two a day, so he's very familiar with this stuff, and that's why we're kind of looking for his guidance. His number 10, I don't know a lot about, is Laid to Rest.
I think that's the metallic. I think the killer wears, it's a slasher, I believe, with a metal face. I think.
Would stand to reason. Rick is a... I don't want to put words in his mouth. He'll be here in a couple weeks to get words out of his own mouth. But I would think he's a particular fan of the slasher genre.
Absolutely.
So that would be... it wouldn't be surprising that he would kind of lead off with a slasher movie.
And I think there's at least two of them. Like, I think there's at least a laid rest,
and it's,
too.
And it's not surprising that he leads off with something that's a little outside of the box. Whereas I think we, not the biggest horror fans, have probably, you know, seen a lot, but not having dug to find them.
My number Dave, 10. Number,
no, you already gave your number 10.
My number 9.
Number 9.
Mine was a tie for number 9. I went Let the Right One In / Let Me In, just because Let the Right One In, I think, is everything a horror should be. It's not your traditional, like, scary, scary horror, but... it's got all the elements that make horror great. And then Let Me In, I thought, was a suitable remake. It was a great movie. If you hadn't seen the original, Let Me In, I think, is a great movie. It's Matt Reeves. I mean, the performances were great. I just think everything about that story is just brilliant for the genre.
Let the Right One In has definitely the right feel to it. Just the overall, you know, it's not present day, but it's recent.
I think it was the 80s, wasn't
it?
Yeah. Late 70s.
And then 80s. It's just everything about it, just the setting with the snow, it gives you the overall necessary feel to be a successful horror movie.
Yeah, that one, that's a little bit higher on my list. And the thing that I kind of did like about it is, if you look, pretty much every shot in the movie has got some kind of orange or some kind of red, which kind of, spoiler alert, this is a vampire movie. And that's, you know, the vampire really only eats blood or drinks blood, so to speak. So that's kind of the reason for that. But I do think it was a really, really good movie.
My number 9 is 2005's Shaun of the Dead. We talked a little bit earlier about Edgar Wright. Shaun of the Dead really brought a great balance of comedy and the elements of horror. And it was the, like, British invasion, you know, along with, we talked about, getting 28 Days Later from Britain. Now we're getting Shaun of the Dead, and it's a great movie.
That's way higher up on my list, because that's one of my favorite movies ever, horror aside. Like, that movie is just, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
I like it a lot, too, but I just booted it right the hell off my list.
Really?
I just did, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I can do that. I just cut and pasted. Sorry.
The reason it's not as high on my list, I guess my criteria is a little different, because I tried to think about, when I think of horror, Shaun of the Dead, to me, I mean, it's a horror comedy.
It's a spoof.
It's a
maybe.
Spoof, yeah.
But
yeah.
It did the horror great.
It did it well.
The zombies
absolutely.
Were good, the gore was good,
yeah.
The suspense, I mean, it was good, and it just happened to nail the comedy even better.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't bother me, like, the fact that it is funny. I think horror movies can be funny, and a lot of them.
I think they're more effective if they are.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives a nice balance with the humor in there. My number 9 probably will appear on someone else's list here shortly. 2008, Trick or Treat. I feel like it is the best anthology movie to come out in years. I kind of thought that VHS might give it a bit of a run for it, and it didn't. Interestingly enough, the guy that wrote this movie also wrote the screenplay for Superman Returns and X2. He did another horror movie, if you're interested. It was... Urban Legends, Bloody Mary.
Oh.
None of these movies are necessarily representative of the work he did on Trick or Treat. So.
Before we get too far, I'll just go ahead and say that Rick of the Dead's number 9 was also Trick or Treat. So that way we can kind of join in this conversation.
And, I mean, it's a great anthology. It's one of the first ones that's pulled off, like we talked about earlier, where it's not just tell a story, tell a story, tell a story. Mm-hmm. It's interweaving, and they all tie together, and it came together perfectly. And I know he wanted to make a sequel, and it bums me out that he hasn't been able to, but
yeah,
I thought
he's
it was
been
great.
A busy dude. He made Frozen, which was that movie about the ski lift.
That was Adam Green.
Was it?
Adam Green directed that.
Yeah, it was. Okay, yeah, that's E-Me. There'll be an Adam Green movie later on my list, and probably Kevin's and Rick's too.
My number 8, Slither, directed by James Gunn, written by James Gunn, starring Nathan Fillion. Just a fantastic movie. It's another one that the horror was done good. It was goofy on a Sam Raimi type level,
mm-hmm.
but not goofy enough to where it didn't make sense. And the gore was good. It was funny.
The characters
were really, really good.
This is also my number 8 pick. So we're kind of on the same wavelength here. Nathan Fillion's awesome in it. I always like to see Mr. Fillion getting work. The story of the movie, very awesome, with the worms going in people's brains and stuff, is really neat.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea.
I mean, it had a Night of the Creeps type feel. Like,
we'll talk about
overall,
movie.
Like, it felt like that. It felt like an 80s horror movie.
Yeah.
Updated. Like, right. It really did.
I saw it in theaters and actually fell in love with it.
Instantly,
first time
yeah,
I
that's,
saw it. Yeah,
I did
no,
too.
There's no doubt. I didn't need to watch it a second time or get anything. It's just, it's fun. It's like Shaun of the Dead, where it's got a comedic aspect to it. It doesn't hammer you over the head with a comedy, mm-hmm. but it's just so much fun. You enjoy yourself watching
it's,
this movie.
It's so much fun. It's really high on my list. We'll talk about it a bit later. So that was your number eight.
And his number eight.
And his number eight. So I'll give you my number eight. That is 2007's The Mist. I like to say that this was directed by Frank Darabont's balls. He had a budget of $30 million to make this movie if he changed his ending. He said, fuck off, I'm not doing that. So he went to Weinstein, and they made the movie for $15 million, and he gave up his director's salary. Now, why did he do that? Well, because of the ending that he wrote, which is different than the ending of the novel. Interestingly enough, Stephen King fucking loved the ending in the movie, said, God damn it, I wish I would have thought of that, because I'd have put it in the book. And the ending is fucking awesome. And one other interesting... Okay, are you going to argue with me?
Yeah.
Don't. Just don't. Save yourself.
I'll let you finish.
One other kind of neat thing that kind of does fit with Frank Darabont and what he's been doing recently. He originally wanted to make the movie in black and white. And there is a black and white version. You can see it on the two-disc DVD if you get The Mist. And I really think you should. It's one of the best Stephen King adaptations, and it's no surprise that it's from Frank Darabont, who's done the best Stephen King adaptations, in my opinion.
Yeah, Darabont's good. The Mist is a quality made movie, and I understand why people like it. I did not like it. I hated the ending. I didn't think it fit. I understand why people like it. It seemed too out of left field to me and didn't seem like it fit the character.
I like that sometimes. I liked that the ending was a little bit out of left field.
I think that there was an evolution to the character, and I think especially if we're doing something that's based off a novel, like, if you've already read the novel, you know how the story ends. But Darabont said, oh yeah, you think you know, but you know you don't.
Like The Watchmen?
Like The Watchmen, kind of, except good.
Rick of the Dead's number eight is the one that I got a lot of emails and stuff about, which is High Tension. High Tension, kind of known for the big twist in the story. It's a pretty good one. It's kind of on my honorable mentions on the outside.
Dave, did you have that on there? That's your boy, right?
No, I didn't. That is Alexander Aja, yeah. And that also kicked off. There was like a 4-year span where French where there were a ton of French horror movies making an impression. We're going to talk about one of them.
Are we? Yeah, okay, it's on your. Yeah,
they made a big impact. Like there was a big strong kick of French horror movies, and High Tension kind of kicked it off.
High Tension maybe gave birth to the influx of French horror movies. Hell yeah, that's right. That's a little tease. That's what we call in the business. It might be about
moving on to my number seven, not from France but from New Zealand. Another one that mixes comedy and horror and just takes a ridiculous premise and actually makes a good movie out of it. Black Sheep, the movie about the zombie sheep that I thought was nailed perfectly. It's another goofy one. Like, they got creative. They did just stupid, ridiculous stuff that should... You look at it on paper and you think, oh, there's no way that's going to work. And it did. Like, it was just a fun, fun movie.
I think that had something to do with the foreign influx and the year, because I don't know if anybody's going to talk about it, but Teeth came out the same year.
That almost made my list,
yeah.
This is, like, in 2007, it was like... You'd go to the DVD store and there's all these bizarre horror movies popping up, like Teeth, which is about a
vagina dentata.
Yes, exactly. A girl with teeth in her vagina. And Black Sheep's kind of the same way. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm going to check this out. And I did, and I enjoyed it. It wasn't too bad. It's about basically zombie sheep or killer sheep. I'm going to change the tone a little bit and go with that French movie we were talking about, which was Inside. This movie is pretty fucked up. There's some shocking things that happen. I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about this movie. I mean, if you've seen it, you know exactly what we're talking about. Right. If you haven't seen it and you're a sicko, well, watch it.
It's a movie about a pregnant lady in her house being terrorized. Well,
Yeah, leave it at that.
Fair enough. I'm in the minority of like fans of horror that didn't like this movie. I understand why people liked it because it was risky with the gore and everything. Yeah. And I don't dislike it because of the gore, because I thought the gore was done well. I just thought it was stupid. Like, I didn't care about what was going on. I didn't care. And then it takes some turns. It's like, seriously? Like, it had some of those moments. And if you take away the gore and the risky, like, violence of it, it
leaves
you with
nothing. There's not a whole lot there.
And I need more than that.
My girlfriend is terrified of this movie. And the reason why is because...
she has a uterus?
Because she has a uterus. Because she says, that can happen. This can happen.
And it's happened close.
It has happened.
Just across the PA border a
right.
few years back.
So this movie is obviously very scary for the females, and I just think they push the boundaries pretty far, and I liked that. I like when horror movies can make you uncomfortable, can make some people turn away.
And that's why I understand why people like it, but like I said, if you take away that boundary pushing, you're left with nothing, really.
I give you that.
Well, that's why maybe it didn't make my list. I didn't really think there was too much special about it. Obviously, my number 7, there was a little bit special about it because somebody already mentioned it. That was Drag Me to Hell. It is the only thing I'll add about it from 2009. It was the only Sam Raimi movie that didn't feature Bruce Campbell because he was busy making a TV show at the time.
Rick of the Dead's number 7 was Broken Lizard's Club Dread. And this one, I will call this movie a comedy movie with a horror setting. Because we talked about comedy and horror together, I would say there's more comedy than horror in this one.
It is more of a comedy, but it's
a slasher.
It's a horror movie.
It's a slasher, and there is gore in it.
I had 15. I put 15 movies down for the last 10 years and had to narrow it down to 10, and that was on there.
I guess what fascinates me about this movie is that it's made by guys known absolutely for comedy. These guys aren't horror directors, but they managed to make a memorable.
Neither was Edgar
slasher.
Wright at the time, so I mean, fair enough.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a memorable. I mean, it was an accurate take on the genre. Like
yeah.
it was,
yeah.
they hit a lot of stuff on the head that needed to be hit, and I thought it came out great. I know it got kind of panned because people went into it expecting Super Troopers, and it's not. But I really like Club Dread. My number 6, we could skip. Trick or Treat, we talked about it.
Trick or Treat, yeah, we went pretty in-depth. My number 6, Rob Zombie's Devil's Rejects. I disliked House of a Thousand Corpses.
I agree.
And is this, would you call this a sequel?
I definitely think it's a sequel.
Sequel, yeah. But I think House of a Thousand Corpses was a music video. This was actually a movie, and I agree with you. I kind of like this movie. It didn't make my list.
It was a different take on it.
They take the characters from House of a Thousand Corpses, give them, you know, an on-the-road, like... on-the-run killers with, like, memorable gore, memorable characters. You get a bit of Rob Zombie, for sure. But I like this movie.
In my opinion, it's his best horror...
Absolutely.
...to date. So my number 6, I think we'll probably talk about it a bit later on. I'm going to steal some of Kevin's thunder, is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. It's from 2006. To me, the best thing I could say about this, the way I look at it is it's Spinal Tap for horror movies. It's a mockumentary about a serial or about a slasher.
This is way higher on my list because this is another one like Shaun of the Dead where it's one of my favorite movies ever. I remember waiting for this movie. Me and my roommate at the time, Jason West, saw a trailer for it. And we had to wait probably about 2 years after the trailer. And there were emails back and forth with the director where he's just like, hey, we're trying to get it out. Like, they put the trailer out before they had any distribution, and I remember it finally opened in Cleveland, and we went, and it was me and Jason and, like, 2 other people in the theater, but I loved it. Like, it's just so good. I hate that first-person thing, but it plays it well, and it knows when to shut it off, and it's a perfect send-up of the slasher genre.
Very good.
There may be other movies that have done what this one does, but I give this one credit for so much. I give this movie credit for changing things, paving the way for movies like Cabin in the Woods to think outside of the box. They're different, but...
And it's just, it's astounding to watch this movie, and you watch it now, 6 years after it's come out, and you think, how the fuck is Nathan Basil not, like, a star?
Yeah.
He is so charismatic in that movie, and, like, he carries that movie, and he's everything a movie star should be in that movie, and... He did nothing. I mean, he was on that short-lived show briefly, but...
Please, anybody that's listening who hasn't seen it, watch Behind the Mask.
Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Yes.
They had to tack that on because there was... Behind the Mask movie.
Right,
but
watch the Leslie Vernon
movie. Yeah, so look for the rise of Leslie Vernon.
Rick of the Dead's number six, we talked about a little bit, was James Gunn's Slither, which is awesome.
My number five, we talked about Leslie Vernon having trouble getting released. This was another small one that ended up finding an audience, The Signal. I think it's one of the most brilliant ideas. It's three different directors, each did a segment. There's segment one, segment two, segment three, and each one has a different feel, has a unique, like, the first one is just straight up horror, and then the second one's just wacky horror comedy, and the contrast is so different, but it works. And this movie from start to finish is amazing.
If I'm not mistaken, The Signal's from 2007, which we talked about, it's that goofy year where we got all the horror comedy, so it fits in that period in time, but I would put it better, definitely, than the other movies from 2007.
Because the first segment sets the tone perfectly as, like, a horror, and then the second segment is so goofy, and it's so funny, and it comes out of nowhere that the first time watching it, you don't really know what's going on, and then it wraps up perfectly. Like, it's just such a well-done... It was done for cheap. It was done, you know, kind of on the DL, and I think it's among, like, big-time horror fans, it's found an audience, because it is a great movie.
My number five... Well, let me preface by saying, my top five, I scrambled the order several times. I would put something at number one and move it, and so on and so forth. But number five was definitely a cherished movie, Hatchet, from 2006. Hatchet is just so awesome. It's a cool story. You get a giant killer who's definitely not human, even though he is. And it's awesome deaths. It's another fun movie, but without so much comedy, I would say.
See, I think there was more comedy than it got credit for.
I think so, too.
The only thing I didn't like about Hatchet was the marketing for it, because it kept saying, like, oh, bringing back old school American horror. No, it was a horror comedy.
That's actually what made me want to see Hatchet
in
so
fairness,
bad.
I mean, Joel David Green, or whatever his name is, and the guy from Dule Hill, I think is his name, they're just funny guys.
This is also my number five. And I think, to speak about the return of the great American horror movie, whatever, I think a lot of maybe what they were referring to was the practical effects that were in that. I'm responsible for it. There's been a lot of horror movies that now use digital effects. They're cheaper. They're easy. They're a lot easier. That's for damn sure. But this movie was done all practically, which is how, you know, when your guys like Tom Savini was doing things back on Friday the 13th, that's how he was doing it when they were doing, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead. This stuff was all practical, and that's what Hatchet did, and I think they did it really, really well.
Rick of the Dead's number five is one I definitely think we're going to talk about a little bit. It was Saw. I actually saw Saw in theaters, and I was pretty impressed with the story, and I think this is one that our audience hopefully has seen, but the acting in the first Saw is so
horrible.
Dreadful.
It's here's where I stand on Saw. I saw it in theaters.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a unique take. It was different than what we'd had in the theaters at the time, but then I watched it again, and that's when everything hit me. Like, the acting is terrible.
Yeah.
The twist at the end is kind
of
unreasonable.
After you see it once,
and that's why I never saw any of the sequels.
It's
I had no interest in the sequels.
After
Saw, but I'll never take it away from Saw.
Like, after Saw, they gave you six more of the same movie.
And counting. They're still going to come out.
Right. Yeah. At one point, there was a contract where they were going to do 10 Saw movies.
Yeah.
And it was going to come out. So. Yeah.
And now they're talking about rebooting or continuing it. So, I mean, they definitely made their mark, because they were the Paranormal Activity where you make them so cheap.
Yeah. Every year.
And every Halloween, one was coming out.
Saws are made for approximately $10 million, I think, and they make like $139 million.
Yeah.
That's insane. And like, seeing this movie, it does something different than horror movies do. It's like, it's almost like a little bit of torture
porn. It started the torture porn.
Yeah, because he's not out stabbing people. It's like a cerebral.
Without Saw, Hostel doesn't get a wide release.
Right.
My number four. This is another one from overseas, The Descent from 2005. This is another one of those, if you watch the first half of it and you go in blind like I did, it's a really good, like, territorial, like, atmospheric thriller that turns into a straight-up horror movie, and I thought it was done well. And it came out in 2005, which 2005 was kind of a weak year for horrors. You had The Descent, and the only other one that really caught my eye was Wolf Creek, which was Australian. So, like, there were no American horror movies of note in 2005, but The Descent, I thought, set up everything great. It was just a well-made movie.
And yeah, we've talked a couple times about actually liking Neil Marshall's movies a lot. I think we talked about Doomsday.
Yeah, I enjoy him as a director.
I knew somebody was going to put The Descent on there, so I didn't really want to add it, but I didn't want to leave Neil Marshall off. So in one of my also-rans, Dog Soldiers, another kind of horror comedy type deal. But I think The Descent's a better movie, but yeah.
Dog Soldiers was what it was. It was entertaining. It was fun. Yeah.
I had Descent on my honorable mentions. I enjoy it. And like you said, the atmospheric thing is what I enjoy. My number four, I'm going to sound kind of hypocritical, but I said Club Dread. Hypocritical just because I kind of knocked Shaun of the Dead for being too comedic. But I love Club Dread. I watch it a lot. The fact that it's a slasher movie is cool, but it's funny. It's a good flick.
My number four, I almost feel like we've already talked about this movie. We have, and I'm sure we will. 04, Dawn of the Dead, the remake. We've talked a bit about James Gunn. He had written Scooby-Doo in 2002, and he'd also done quite a few trauma movies before that. But this is really kind of what launched him. It was also on my list of best remakes, so it's made two of my lists.
James Gunn
doesn't get
to make Slither if it weren't for the success of this.
Absolutely right.
This is like the best remake.
And Zack Snyder doesn't get to do anything either
if James Gunn
doesn't write this.
I thought it was an entertaining enough movie, but the first Dawn of the Dead said something. This one didn't. And this one, I mean, like I said, 28 Days Later kicked off. I know people cringe when you say it, but it did kick off running zombies. Yeah. Dawn of the Dead ran with it. And
Dawn of the Dead remakes is really cool. I mean, you got to check that one out for sure. Rick's number four was also The Devil's Rejects, the Rob Zombie joint we talked about.
My number three we talked about, Behind the Mask, Rise of Leslie Vernon.
My number three is actually probably one of my top five favorite movies. It's Murder Party. It's billed as Napoleon Dynamite meets horror, but it's not really. It explores the concept of going to a murder party, and it's a very goofy lead character, and it's just there's some really nice little thrills in this.
I'd say
movie.
It's a niche movie, even more so than most horror movies.
Yeah.
Like I don't think it's for everybody, but it's definitely good if you're into that. Like it
I didn't really care for it all that
it's
much.
It's an entertaining enough movie. I wasn't nuts about it, but. I liked what it was.
It takes place, like, on Halloween. I mean, guy goes to what he thinks is a Halloween party. It's actually a murder party. And it's... I like the thrills that it provides. Every year when it's October, I know I'm going to watch Murder Party.
You have a murder party.
I have a murder party.
My number three, we have talked about sticking with the James Gunn theme. I really like Slither. And, you know, this, if you want to know kind of, if you're interested to see what Guardians of the Galaxy tonally might come out like, watch this movie, maybe watch some of his trauma movies. That's his style. I mean, he's not going to be able to do the same thing on Guardians, but
he's
I mean,
not
going
to be able
style.
To do Super with Rise
no.
of the or Legend.
No, he's not going to be able Guardians to have any penis removals in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Rick of the Dead's number three was Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie
same
Vernon,
as
which
mine,
we talked
yeah.
about.
My number two, we've talked about, Shaun of the Dead. It's probably a top 10 ever movie for me, so.
My number two, Behind the Mask. So, you had Behind the Mask 3, Dave.
Yeah.
Rick had Behind the Mask 3. I had it number two.
I have it on my list. I think it was like six, but
so,
it could have
I
been
mean,
much higher.
That's, yeah. Overall, I think we all feel very strongly about Behind the Mask, Rise of Leslie Vernon.
One thing we haven't said about Behind the Mask is, like, people that like horror movies and are really into horror have found it, but I think a mainstream audience obviously hasn't, but I think there's so much there that will appeal to mainstream audiences. I don't think you have to be a horror fan to love this
movie.
It's
like a cult version of Scream, I think. As much as they play on you know, the tropes of horror movies, this does it too, but in
but
a mockumentary.
And more
what
creatively.
What I personally love about Behind the Mask is that when you think of slasher movies, you want that aesthetic. You want the look of the killer, how he kills people, what weapon he carries. You want, and then the story can lack as long as the deaths are good.
Yeah.
This one, you don't even really think about his mask, his weapon. It's the story. It's
the character.
It's the character.
You care about Leslie Vernon.
Right.
Like,
right.
he's not just a Jason. Like, there's a character there.
Yeah, there's, in my number two, there's a little bit of character development. You care about the, the killer, I guess, you know, we'll say. This 2008, Let the Right One In. The movie, and it's the original. I never saw the remake because it's a shot-for-shot remake.
It's really good, but it's not necessary if you've seen that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I saw the original, and the movie's so good, it actually kind of makes me want to read the book, which is incredibly rare. I don't read books.
Rick's number two is Inside, which we talked about.
And my number one we've talked about. It's probably my number one favorite movie of all time, 28 Days Later. And yeah, like I said, it kicked off a new way to introduce zombies as far as an outbreak and not making them living dead. And I mean, obviously it's not a zombie movie, but it is.
According to Danny Boyle, it's not a zombie movie.
But it is. I mean, they're the same... Especially now, and zombie. There's been so many zombie movies over the last 10 years.
You should read what Danny Boyle wrote about that.
No, I know what he said about it.
Okay,
but it's still there's zombies. Like they're not traditional. They're a new take on them.
He specifically did a rage movie because a virus movie because that's kind of the statement he wanted to make. And I mean, I don't want to get into a long discussion.
No, I know.
And it gave Cillian Murphy an American career.
Yeah,
I mean, he was in a ton of stuff after this, including all three of the Batman movies, the
including
new Batman.
Red Lights that just released on DVD today, which is one of the worst movies of the year.
Which, yeah, I guess, with one of the worst original trailers of the year. Interestingly enough, it is. I'm going to kind of jump the gun here. It is also my number one movie, and you were to piggyback on what you were saying. It gave Cillian Murphy, a career, but he was kind of the third choice for that role.
Yeah,
the first choice was supposed to be, and you could kind of see this one, Ewan McGregor. He couldn't do it. So then, do you know who the second choice was?
No.
And makes, well, I mean, he could have done it, but if you go Obi-Wan and Cillian Murphy, in the middle, Ryan Gosling
was supposed to be in this movie. If anybody else but Cillian Murphy, I don't know how it would have affected it, but he's great in it. He's got the look.
He's fantastic. It was an introduction to him, which I think you relate to a character a lot better in somebody's first movie when you don't know who they are because you're relating to the character, not the actor. And he had this naivety to him, and the progression of the character he carried off perfectly. Yeah.
Before I give my number one, we'll give Rick's, which is Hatchet. We talked about that a little bit already. My number one is actually from 2005, and it's something that's getting a remake next year. It's Old Boy. Old Boy is a Tartan Extreme movie from Korea, and it's about a guy...
Jang-woo Park.
Yes, exactly. A guy who wakes up in a room... And he's stuck there. He can't get out. After 15 years, he's released, and he wants to find out what happened to him.
See, that's an interesting choice, because I do love that movie. I never really considered it a horror movie. I know
either.
Some people do. It's a revenge flick to me.
Which I guess is a subgenre. Maybe
which is a subgenre.
Hairs,
so, but... I mean, like, I'm not going to... It never dawned on me to think Old Boy for this, because I don't consider it a horror movie, but I know some people do.
I consider it a horror movie.
And it makes sense.
Because I don't know what other genre you'd put it in, but extreme imagery, some cool killings, and just the idea that Spike Lee is remaking this with Josh Brolin, I can't wrap my mind around still.
And
Charlton Copley and Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah. So we'll see next year how I feel about the remake.
So those are our top 10 of the last decade. I think we pretty much spanned 2002 to 2012.
Real quickly, though, were there any on your list that didn't get mentioned or any of your honorable mentions?
That I'd really want to mention? Yeah, let me just give one. And it very nearly made my list. It's from 2002 as well. Directed by a guy that did mostly music videos for Pearl Jam, U2, NXS, and Alice Chains, Mark Pellington directed The Mothman Prophecies, which I goddamn love, and it's fucking happened, so I think that makes it creepy too.
Yeah, I had Severance, which is another British horror movie. Mm-hmm. This is just rounding out my top 15. Donkey Punch, which was another British one. It's more of a thriller, not so much a horror, but it has a lot of horror elements. And then this isn't just because it stars one of my friends from high school, but L.O. is one of the most unique, interesting takes on a romantic horror story you'll ever see.
I actually, if you guys don't mind, some listeners sent me a couple of movies, and I'd like to go over those just because I think it touches on some we didn't talk about. Jen Waltman said Zombieland, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, which I actually watched.
I'm surprised that it wasn't on Dale's list.
It was almost.
I watched that last night. Spoiler alert, but the uniqueness of that movie and people, just like the idea that people are killing themselves.
Yeah, it was close to my list. Yeah.
The remake of I Spit on Your Grave and My Soul to Take. Those are the ones she sent. Sarah S. said Cabin in the Woods, we talked about. Inside.
Man, a girl picking Inside.
Yeah. Tom Badger said High Tension, we talked about. This is one that we talked about French movies, and it didn't get mentioned. Melissa S. said Martyrs.
Yeah.
See, Martyrs didn't get mentioned, and then Ills was close. Yep. Ills was another one of those really good French ones.
Martyrs, I think, was actually good, though. Of those?
I think Martyrs was good. I think Ills was good. It was like the what The Stranger should have been.
And then finally, listener Gina sent House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. We talked about a little bit. But an interesting one that I'm kind of surprised didn't make any of our four lists was House of the Devil. That one from a couple years ago that people rave about how amazingly fantastic it is.
It's okay.
It lacked a lot for me. Like, I've talked about Ty West before. Yeah. There was a lot I liked about it, but more that I disliked about it.
Not a lot to dislike about our fantasy film ball that we're going to do. Originally, the deadline was the 30th of September, which we are firmly past as of right now, our recording date. But because I'm a nice guy and because we're running a little bit long anyway, we're going to go ahead and extend the deadline till next week. So if you're kind of on the fence about joining our fantasy film ball league, get off that fence and give us your five picks for movies that are going to come out between now and the end of the year. If you don't know the rules, listen to our podcast where Dave and I drafted, because that'll give you kind of an idea.
Episode 19, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds
or
about right.
Or check Facebook and Twitter. I've been tweeting and Facebooking the rules. So.
Yeah, so yeah, check that. Get your selections into us, and we'll kind of go over the people that have done that. We'll go over that next week. We'll put up a blog on the website so you can see everybody's, and that's how we'll track it from there. A couple movies. Well, I know one movie is on one of our listeners' fantasy film ball list, and that comes out this week, and it is Frankenweenie, also out in wide release. Well, it's Taken 2 and Pitch Perfect. Limited release this week, Butter, VHS, and The Paperboy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Taken 2 might have an audience. I think Frankenweenie will find one. And Pitch Perfect, I think, is riding high off of Buzz.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting week. Because I think Looper and Hotel Transylvania hold strong. Like, I think these three and those two are your top five.
I'm curious to see how I'm thinking Frank and Weenie will be number one.
I don't know. I don't think it'll take a lot of audience away from Hotel Transylvania. But I think Transylvania looks more family friendly than the black and white one.
Yeah, you're probably right. And the black and white one, spoiler alert, the dog dies. You know what I mean? So, like, maybe kids, like, parents don't want to put their kids through that.
I think
that.
Pitch Perfect has a shot at number one. If I had to guess,
how many times are you going to see it?
I'd say Taken.
I guess I probably agree with you just because Taken, the first one, did so well. And I don't see Looper bouncing back and having a real strong second week. I think instead of doing Over Under this week, kind of to help with time here, we usually at this point do a what to watch, and being that it is October, we're going to do sort of like Kevin had said, our buddy Rick of the Dead likes to watch a horror movie. He does this all year round because he's a freak. But we'd like to give you for every night in October one movie to watch. So we're going to go ahead and give you eight that'll take you through the next time we record our podcast, which will now be online Tuesday instead of really, really late Monday, early Tuesday morning. So we're going to be going a day later, but I'm sure you'll all survive. Kevin, I tell you what, why don't you lead it off, give us the first movie to watch.
Well, I actually started mine last night because I plan on doing it this year, but what I'm telling you to watch first is Monster Squad. It's an 80s movie that if you don't know about, stop what you're doing and immediately go and find a copy of Monster Squad and watch it.
Good movie.
Murder Party, which was on my top 10 list, and Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas. That's always a good one to signal that Halloween is, in fact, almost here.
I will give you my three. What the hell? I'll lead off with my Fred Dekker movie. That is Night of the Creeps. I absolutely love this movie. It's actually the reason why I went to see Slither. Interesting aside, Greg Nicotero is an extra in this movie. What else should you watch? Night Watch from 2004. That's Timur Bekmambetov, wanted Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter. This movie is better than both of those. It spawned a sequel, which isn't as good as any of them. So that should tell you a little something about Day Watch. But definitely Night Watch is worth a watch. The last movie that I've got for you, keeping in my theme of all having the word night in the title, I'm going way back on this one. It's 1945's Dead of Night. It's not the first anthology movie ever made. That distinct honor goes to a German movie called I'm not even going to tell you what it is in German, but it's Waxworks. That came out about 20 years before Dead of Night. This one is one of the first British movies that actually came out after World War II, and it was a pretty heavy influence on the films of Amicus from the 60s and 70s, and it is one of those anthology movies that does kind of have a narrative, and they all tie together. So,
I also went with a theme, but I'm going a little outside the box instead of going straight horror movies, because we're going to give you a lot of those this month. I'm going more thriller, and I'm going cult-related thrillers. The Sound of My Voice just released on DVD this week. It's just a cult movie, so it's like a thriller, it's more psychological. And then also in the psychological thriller from last year, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. So not your traditional horror movies, but still have a creepy element to them, and both really well-made movies.
So those are, I guess, your first eight movies, if my math is right, to watch. I'll take you to next week, and we'll give you some more every week. You don't have to watch ours, you could. But, you know, in case you're going to try and do the horror movie every day, if you're ever kind of lacking for an idea, you know, we'll be sure to give you some throughout the rest of the month. We'll also have another top 10 next week. I'm not really sure what it's going to be.
We're going to talk horror movies all October. So.
Yeah, spoiler alert. We're going to do that. How about we do...
I want to do horror movies that didn't get sequels that we want to see sequels to.
Holy shit.
Like we talked about, Behind the Mask would probably make our list and stuff like that. Yeah. To where Trick or Treat, obviously. We touched on a few of them. Like what horror movies did you want to see
a
sequel to?
You think?
I could come up with probably 10 off the top of my head.
All right. That one just seems a lot more difficult. And I'm not interested in difficulty. But no, we'll give it a try. What the hell? So, you know, tweet us your suggestions. Actually, just tweet us your suggestions, and I will use them to compile my list so I don't have to do any homework for this. You can, of course, give us your suggestions for horror movies that don't yet have a sequel that you'd like to have one. You can get us those suggestions. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can post them right to our website at moviesonup.com. Put them on our Facebook page. You'll find the link there from our website. Or you can find us on the Twitter at moviesonup.
And before we go out, I just want to have one plug real quick. My buddy Ward Roberts, we talked about the trailer a few weeks ago. His movie Dust Up is now available on iTunes on demand. I think it's on Netflix, or it will be very soon. So if you're looking for something to watch, that one's easily available now.
Cool.
Movies on Up is now on Instagram as well. If you'd like a visual representation of what we're doing, not just sounds for your ear holes, it's Movies on Up at Instagram. And then I will be at Cinema Wasteland in Strongsville, Ohio this Saturday, and I will be wearing a Movies on Up pin. Come and find me.
Maybe you can score a pin from Kevin.
Yeah, maybe I can give you one.
Maybe you can.
Yeah, and as always, you can find me at DaveBasella.com, at DaveBasella on Twitter, or listen to my other show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave.
And remember, of course, now that we are officially in October, and we can be thinking about what you're doing for Halloween, what you better be doing on the 25th, that is a Thursday, if you're here in the greater Youngstown area, Kevin and I will be checking out Birdemic. That'll be at Tinseltown, 8 o'clock. Tickets are on sale now, so grab your tickets. We'll hang out, watch the Riff Tracks version of Birdemic. Also, kind of like we had said before, send us some suggestions for horror movies that don't have sequels that you'd like to have a sequel. And there will be a sequel of our horror movie podcast, a horror movie theme podcast. It'll be available next week. Until then, keep it up.